That is our mindfulness bell to start. Let's see. Oh, welcome to part one of four-part intro to meditation course. I guess the first orientation is this is, most of you already know, different than secular meditation in that it's being offered in the context of, in the broader container of the Buddha Dharma, which means everything here is offered out of generosity, freely. And in this tradition, that is an important value, generosity. So in the almost 35 years this center has been open, they have never charged a cent for any teachings, which I just think is beautiful. So I want to invite you into the field of generosity, that whatever happens tonight or doesn't happen tonight, to be generous with yourself. This is a process, this is a path, and it takes a while. This is a collective space, we're all caretakers of it. So just if you see something that needs to shift, let me know, let Manny know, I'll take care of it. And while mindfulness, sati, can be engaged in without Buddhism, Buddhist practice is not possible without mindfulness. And so here, I'll be offering a perspective that's deeply informed by Buddhism. I won't always talk about it explicitly, but you can trust everything that comes out of my mouth is deeply rooted in that. And this is more about than anything else, learning to be present, to have intimacy with our lives, our experience, our hearts, our minds, rather than just thinking about it, rather than being on the discursive level. It's dropping into a more profound attention, direct experience. Nothing between you and the experience, not your ideas, thinking about it, philosophy, fears, hopes, desires, managing the situation. And as mindfulness meditation develops, you'll notice yourself doing all of those things because we're human and that's what our human minds like to do. So it's learning to have a choice in how you relate to experience. Learning to have a choice, learning some distant perspective. And that can be such a huge ally. It's responding rather than reacting to what's happening in life. I would be remiss if I didn't add that the key value underpinning all of the sort of ethical structure of Buddhism is non-harming. Non-harming. And many people throughout the millennia that this tradition has been evolving entered the path of practice dedicated to non-harming. That's the fundamental motivation, and that the practice is a means to be able to walk through life, not weak, not passive, but in a resilient strength that doesn't harm yourself or others. And a lot of folks who come to meditation, at first it's about not harming ourselves, like things aren't always going so well. But it evolves and blossoms into a way of moving through the world that is quite beautiful and can transform relationships, especially our relationship with ourselves. So that's the big picture overview. And the next thing I'm going to talk about here is posture. And we're down a camera. I haven't figured out what's happening with the central camera, but I'm going to model posture. And I think what I'll do is move to that central chair and use the hand mic. First, I'll show you guys on this chair so that the folks on Zoom can also see. So first, for those of you sitting in the room, can you see me okay with this table? Okay. So the basic principle, whether you're sitting in a chair or on a cushion, is to have your weight balanced over your hips and have your spine more or less erect. That isn't a hard and fast rule. It does help with the energetics, particularly because we practice mindfulness of breathing. Balancing relaxation and alertness to be able to open your chest. So the shoulders slightly back, the sternum slightly up, and then the skull centered over the shoulders. Maybe imagining a string from the top of the skull. Another really helpful thing to prevent long-term back pain is to have your knees slightly lower than your hips. So if you're really tall, you might consider, it probably doesn't matter in a session this short, but an hour and a half is still a significant amount of time to sit. You might consider raising your hips a little bit so that there's just a very slight angle. Natural curve of the back also helps prevent any injury long term. And people kind of laugh when I say meditation injuries, but I've had one. It's no fun. So. Okay. Generally, this is a very safe sport. Okay. Unless you fall off your chair or something, you're generally okay. All right. I'm going to move to the central area and model a couple of other things.
Mimi, can you grab me a bench?
Did you, everybody hear okay what I was talking about with the chair? I'm going to model bench and cushion. So the bench is much more helpful for some people than others. Basically sitting like this, and I'll turn and show the camera in profile as well, but it encourages a natural curve in the lumbar spine. And for people with certain kinds of back or hip problems, it's actually really helpful not to cross your legs. I am one of those people. So the natural curve in the spine here, centered above here. And then you can even put your cushion on your legs if you want to take the pressure off your shoulders. Cushion. We've all seen the classic posture. I think I can actually show this to everybody except for Manny, who's not jumping. Again, it's the hips higher than the knees, right? If you can't do what I'm doing and have your knees on the mat, you can use a little support cushion under one knee or the other, or you can use a second cushion under your butt. The pose I'm in right now is known as Taylor style or Burmese style. And it doesn't matter which leg you have in front, but it can be helpful to alternate them if you want to see. Or if you want to see. Okay. So this works very well. The principle again here is stability. Stability, balance, relaxation, and alertness. Final option among sitting is to do pretty much the same thing one does on the bench, but on a cushion. You take the cushion and put it edgewise and sit on it like this. For me, this works a little bit better with a slightly bigger cushion than I've got, but this is fine. And this can be really comfortable for some people. and as a preferred posture. Again, it encourages the natural curve of the lower back. And you can even dangle your toes off the back of the Zabotan, this big square mat, which can take some pressure off the shins. So any of these are fine. I just encourage you all to experiment. There's absolutely nothing wrong with sitting in a chair. As meditation develops, some people find that they have better access to the energetics of their breathing sitting on the floor. But that doesn't mean you have to do it. As you notice, I sit in a chair most of the time. So it is possible to be highly developed on this path and never sit on the floor. Okay, can you hear me okay again? Online, yes. Okay, good. I'm not so worried about the people right in front of me. They're close enough for the most part. So just to name, we're not going to go through it in this moment, but standing is an equally valid posture. If you have a martial arts background or a yoga background, you already have a really good sense of how to practice standing meditation. Again, the principle is balance. Be rooted where you are. And actually, the first long retreat I sat, standing and lying down were my primary postures. Lying down is hard to show in a hybrid setup like this, but if any of you want specific guidance in it, I'm very happy to offer it. I can offer it next week or at a break or something like that. Actually, it's the hardest posture. Anyone care to guess why? You fall asleep, which could be a good thing, depending on what you're after in your meditation. However, it is also good to try to learn to meditate lying down without falling asleep, if that's your primary posture. The quick trick I will say is to, if you're lying down on your back, put one elbow and forearm on the ground, the mat, and keep the hand up at 90 degrees. Most people will wake up when their hand starts to fall, and most of the rest of us will wake up if the hand hits the ground or the wall. If you don't wake up, you need the sleep. Okay, so that's the quick, that kind of quick hack on lying meditation. All right. So I kind of covered the question of why are you here a little bit informally earlier. But I think if you're open to it, I'd like to hear what you'd like to get out of meditation in these next moments or weeks, what your hopes or expectations are. And those of you online are welcome to speak or put it in the chat. Those of you in person, I'll just ask if you use the mic so that the online folks can hear. Right. What draws you to meditation? Okay, it does. Thank you.
My focus in meditation is to use it as much as possible in my everyday life. So the application of finding that breath or that pause. You said, I think before, responding rather than reacting.
Yeah.
And that's key for me in my day-to-day. That's why I meditate.
Wonderful. So having that choice.
Having that choice.
Great. Thank you, Deb. Cindy, yeah.
I do it for my health, really. It really helps bring down my blood pressure, which is what I need after COVID and mindfulness and breathing therapy, I call it. It's incredibly powerful.
Nice. So
So,
relaxes you, it helps with your health.
oh, so yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it sounds like it has a beneficial emotional effect too. Good. Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to read a couple of these. Nicole, I am a special education teacher. Bless you, which can be stressful. Yeah, I bet it can. She adds, I would like to be more mindful and relaxed and quickly come to my center. Beautiful. You're in the right place. And then Avrin, I don't know if I'm pronouncing your name right. I find myself pulled in a million different directions with kids and especially media. I think that's what that's saying. I want to be able to choose where my attention goes. Yes, powerful. Nice.
I don't know that I have a short, simple answer. To try to summarize, I'll begin at the beginning when I was a teenager on LSD, listening to Alan Watts lectures on late night radio. It really sunk in. So then when TM came around, I was 16 years old, and I went and I took that class, and I did that for a while, and then I moved in a little bit later, got into martial arts and the belly breathing and following your breath with eyes closed, eyes open, standing meditation, all of that stuff. A little bit of mindfulness and as it relates to Buddhism, just been to, I guess, a couple of lectures, read a lot of books, watch a lot of YouTube videos. So I'm kind of all over the map. But
Yeah, how come you're doing it?
I guess mostly it's gets me a little peace and tranquility,
Great.
which is in short supply, at least in my life. So
Yeah.
that's probably the main reason.
Thank you. Great. You don't have to talk if you don't want to. You're very welcome to.
For me, it's about trying to have more wholesome mind states.
Great.
Positive moments and to train myself to keep going in that direction. And then also I want to live consciously and be really careful about which thoughts I breathe in, like you were saying, you know, just something and to be careful that I'm not caught up in this. In this culture, which I am a product of, but I would be careful and make wholesome decisions and live an authentic life. Yeah, so I really think that meditation and is a refuge, although it's, you know, it's more than that. It's but I'll just stop and.
It's beautiful, Kevin. Thank you. Yeah, you hit on such a key, well, number of key things, but one of them that I picked up on is to cultivate your mind in a more wholesome direction. Like, that's huge. It's such a huge ally in reducing suffering. And to begin to discern and make choices that are helpful to the heart and the mind and your life. So, thank you for being on the room. Yeah, Susan, please.
Well, I started, excuse me, I started mostly to cope with my PTSD, honestly, to be able to learn how to be in my body and learn what it felt like to be calm. And so I definitely still am really reliant on my practice for that. And then I kind of fell in love with the religion, you know, kind of, yeah. I mean, that was something I didn't really expect, and having that in my life is huge. And it really, it gives my life meaning and direction. And I get to be around people who have the same values. It's amazing. So thank you.
Thank you. So the overall tradition, the wisdom tradition and spiritual underpinning and the community is a big piece. I love the range of what's in the room. Yeah. So, many of you don't really need a guided meditation given the background I've been hearing. And please go along with us because this is an intro course. And this will be a short one. So to find that posture, balance of relaxation and alertness. And notice the effect of the conversation we just had. Maybe some things other people said resonate for you, broaden your own ideas about why you want to meditate or why you do meditate. Maybe just connecting with your own motivation, your own intention. And to notice any expectations that may have crept in and acknowledge those too. And then allowing, inviting your body to soften. Noticing the sensations in your body, especially any sensations associated with breathing. You notice the chest rising and falling. Perhaps your ribs are flexing just a little bit, your rib cage. Or your diaphragm moving, the Dan Tien Nahara, the belly. Allowing the breathing. In this tradition, there's no need to control the breath, to make anything happen. And the invitation is to invite relaxation. Perhaps it's the abdomen expanding and contracting. or a sense of warmth and cool on the inhale and exhale at the nose. Settle in, find a spot where the breathing feels most comfortable, most obvious to you. If other thoughts, sensations, distractions come, the basic practice is to acknowledge them gently, kindly, and as graciously as possible, return the center of your attention to breathing. Home base. Anchor. If you're noticing thinking, there's no need to fight it, to struggle. No worries. Just invite it to fade to the background, the periphery. Returning your attention to the naturalness of the body breathing. If it's helpful to relax a little bit more, can be advantageous to just notice, attend to the out-breath a little bit more than the in-breath. Being close to the sensation. Staying in contact until the very end of the out-breath. And then allowing the attention to rest for a moment in any point of stillness before the next in-breath naturally emerges. That was about a 15-minute meditation, just kind of to introduce a little bit. And I'm especially curious, you don't have to say, that any of you who are beginners, if there are any questions so far from what we've talked about. And those of you who are more experienced beginners can also ask questions. But I want to start and see if any of the people just starting out, questions, comments, anything you noticed. Did anyone have trouble staying with their breath the whole time? Yeah? Okay. So here's where some of the experienced beginners can help. What takes you away from your breath? Anybody? Susan's pointing to her head. Yeah. Right. I remember when I first started practicing, I was so clueless, and I got the instructions on the breathing meditation. I was like, this is so simple. Why do people have trouble with it? And the teacher looked at me and he said, usually it's what gets in the way of them paying attention. Like, oh yeah, everything else. Yeah, that. So to just affirm. Oh, Susan, did you want to say? Talk, please.
Oh, sure. Thanks. So it took me a long time actually to learn to be able to do breath meditation.
Mm-hmm.
I was really grateful that when I first came to Insight Santa Cruz, somebody finally taught me alternatives.
Yes.
So I just wanted to throw that out for anybody who might be new, that if you struggle on the breath, like, you know, for different reasons, anxiety, COPD, et cetera, et cetera. There are ways, there are other things we can do as well.
Absolutely. Thank you for naming that. I will be covering more of those in week two.
Cool.
I have asthma, so breath meditation was not obvious for me as a great beginning either. So just to name in the room, though I won't cover it in much detail tonight, that the two sort of biggest alternates within the realm of mindfulness meditation that are accessible to beginners are sound. Sound can be incredibly helpful, especially if you have a lot of physical pain. Sound is a good place to go. And then the other one is general sensations of your whole body. You can pick a spot in your body or your whole body. And there's usually enough going on there once you really tune in to keep grounded. And I'll talk about it a little bit in the next guided meditation, but another classic way, and all of you have, I'm sure, heard this whole thing, count to 10 if you're going to get angry, right? Like, what, do we learn that in kindergarten or something? So it's actually a meditation technique too. Usually, if you can do mindfulness of breathing, one on the in-breath, one on the out-breath, two on the in-breath, two on the out-breath, and so on. If you can get up to 10 as a beginner, you're doing really well. So a lot of people start with 1 to 3. So just to normalize. And very advanced meditators also use this technique. But what they do is sets of 10, and they can get up into the tens of thousands once the concentration is strong. So generally, the emphasis is to focus more on your embodied experience than any concept in your mind, to the extent that you can in this practice. So if your mind starts to get tight with that mental activity, to loosen up, focus on the moment again. Any other questions or comments? Okay. As I mentioned, and as one of us pointed out, often what Locke's initial focus on the moment, dropping into the moment, what gets in the way, people think, is thoughts, right? And I want to kind of plug that thoughts aren't the enemy in meditation. They are part of our mind's natural capacity. As one of my first teachers said, it's just like the stomach secretes bile, our tear ducts secrete tears, our brain secretes thoughts. Yes, they can go away in some rarefied meditation states, and that's lovely. It's not really the point. It really isn't. It's lovely when they quiet down enough to get calm, right? And that's what most of us are aiming for, at least initially. And when they're arising, it's about the relationship to them, not about whether or not they go away. That's where the calm, that's where the equanimity eventually comes from. So it's kind of like being a naturalist in your own ecosystem. Your mind and body are your ecosystem. Excuse me, my microphone's wandering. I don't know why it does this. So if your mind and your body are your ecosystem, the observing mind, mindfulness, your intelligence, your innate intelligence is the naturalist. And the naturalist's job isn't to capture a certain species or cage it or drive it away, make it not happen. It's to observe the interaction between all of the different elements of the natural world. And that's what we're doing when we're observing our own hearts, bodies, and minds. And like the naturalist, it's helpful to have a little bit of distance, right? And that's where anchoring the attention to breathing, to sound, to the body can come in. And this meditative stability will develop over time. It's not always accessible to beginners. Some people get beginner's luck, and it is like right off the bat. Don't worry, your time will come. You'll have trouble at some point. And enjoy it when it happens. So it's watching and allowing patiently what's happening in mindfulness, without trying to intervene too much. Now, I'll just say a plug. If you have really intense thoughts, emotions, memories coming up, then there are techniques to use to pull yourself out. And I'm happy to talk about those. Mindfulness is not the only game in town, even in mindfulness meditation. So if you feel yourself being flooded or overwhelmed, it's not cheating to open your eyes and look around. Right? There are open-eyed forms of meditation. I practice several of them. In particular, checking out what's behind you and around you. One of my teachers calls it useless gazing, like seeking out all the corners in the room and just looking at them. I'm doing it right now, which is why I'm looking like this on the camera. It has an effect on the nervous system of chilling things out, calming things down. So if you get caught in a thought spiral or something like that, just know that there are other things that are fine to do. You don't have to be at the mercy of really strong gales of thought, winds. And for most of us, most of the time, reorienting back to the body, to hearing, if necessary, seeing is enough to recenter. Okay. Another few basics. It's not trying to experience something you've heard about, read about, or experienced before. Who here has tried to recreate the meditation experience? Oh yeah, right. And how much fun is that? Yeah, exactly, Manny. Not good. I have known people who have spent years trying to recreate meditation experiences. That is a major source of what we in this scene call dukkha, suffering. If you catch yourself doing it, be gentle with yourself. It's human. We all try to make good things happen again. And hold it lightly. The sooner you can let go of it, the sooner that experience or something like it might actually visit again. They don't come on command, mostly. Also, if you're meditating, to do your best to have your body and your mind comfortable. Do your best. So lying down. I don't advocate slouching because it's actually painful for the spine over time, but keeping a natural posture that allows breathing and shifting when you need to, right? No rigid, we don't have to look like one of these statues. They are statues, right? We're animals, we're humans, we need to move. And as much as possible, practice stillness. You know, the first impulse of discomfort is not the time to move. It's like when it comes back, that's the time maybe. After you've noticed it, noticed the impulse. And just my notes say pay attention to the present moment. I actually prefer to inhabit the present moment as best you can. Inhabit it. Really make friends with it if possible. That's not always possible, but it's not always friendly. But to be there for it, immersed in it. Our minds, man, maybe yours don't, but most of the people I know, and myself included, our minds have this tendency to be these virtual reality machines. And like the movies of our life, including soundtrack and drama and, you know, lighting, mood lighting, plot, all of it, right? The one thing in common, usually, mostly, is who's at the center? Yourself, right? And I don't mean that to accuse anyone of being egotistical. Often we're an anti-hero, right? It's not always good news. So the invitation here, rather than getting caught up in the movie and the story, is to move to the intimacy of direct experience. I don't know when it happened. I've been, if you count Tai Chi and yoga, I've been meditating since the mid-90s, so it's been a minute. And at some point in the mindfulness meditation, I don't know when it happened, but I realized I was having a lot less inner chatter. I'm like, wow, it's so much more spacious in here. Because most of it isn't all that pleasant or relevant. So those moments when they occur of just being present with a flower, with a friend, with a breath, with a moment, appreciating them, savoring them. Okay, so I'm talking a lot. And my notes are all cutty wampus, so just give me a minute here to get myself together. That's what happened. Okay, great. I printed out something twice, so I'm just confused. Yes. So that solidity, that fixity, that is our mind's creation. Most of the time, the world is changing a lot, right? Light is changing, breath is changing, sound is changing. And that can be a wake-up call. It can also be a respite in the moment. So any questions, comments, complaints about what I just said before we go in? Yeah, Tess.
Would you speak a little bit more of
where's there is, there. Thank you. Okay, hang on one second. Can I do a brin first? This, and then can I ask you to hold Tess? She says, I struggle a lot with that last part, specifically the negative self-talk. Is there a trick to come back? You mean in coming back to the present moment, right? That's a big one for a lot of people, Abreen. It's epidemic in our culture, self-criticism, negative self-talk. It's almost like, so there's a lot to say about it, but I'll say the simplest thing is that mindfulness, mental attention is like a muscle. We train it. So you don't go to the gym and try to lift a 100-pound barbell the first day, right? You start smaller. At least I do, definitely. And every time you bring your attention back to your body, to your breathing, you are training the muscle of your mind away from the negative self-talk and back to your present moment experience. So just knowing that can be helpful. And then second is to gently say, not now, not now. So if it's really strong self-talk, you might even want to open your eyes and recognize where you are in the moment. But that's the first basic instruction, and we'll be talking about this more in the coming weeks. You're also welcome to ask again later if you want. I hope that was helpful. Tess, yeah.
Your last comment about change, but you said fixity, and yeah. I think that negative talk is an example of that.
Yes.
Are there other examples of the fixity that we get stuck in?
Oh, yeah. So it's not always conscious, but it's always going to be this way, right? Whatever it is, I'm feeling stressed and busy, it's always going to be this way. And it might not be like a conscious thought, but it's an implicit thought. So that's another example. One that's really common, and it's not necessarily negative, though it often is I'm always like X, right? The self, putting yourself in a box. I'm the one who's X, or you're the one who's X. Those are other examples. Welcome. Is there anything, like, are there other examples that you've thought of in your own life?
No, the word caught me. Mm-hmm. When you take, you know, breath is always changing, you know, weather's always changing. But it helps me to just kind of be aware when I am in a fixed place, you know, to come back to breath or something. But I think hearing examples also helps me. Oh, I'm not by myself in this.
Yeah.
This happens to all of us.
Yeah.
And it's subtle for me, I believe. It's not always right, very clear.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And concepts. The longer a person practices, the more it will become clear that living in a world of concepts is almost like living in one dimension. There's a filter over our eyes on reality. And when the concepts drop away, the fixity drops away, it's like those moments, maybe you're at the ocean and you're just present with the waves crashing, or the wind on your face, or the redwoods around you. It's so much fuller and more rich in this sensory way. So the practice heads in that direction. And it's the opposite of fixity, right? It's this lush, rich, wide world. So I want to acknowledge not all of this is exactly beginner material, because it's not all exactly beginners in the room. So if you're a beginner and you're like, what are these people talking about? It's okay. All of this stuff unfolds over time. So I'm going to offer again a little guided meditation on breathing. And we're going to more explicitly go into now a practice called noting or counting, like I talked about before. So I was just talking about concepts and thoughts. They're not the enemy. We just don't want to live there, right? So this is an example of using concepts and thoughts as a helper in meditation. Because our minds, we have these amazing brains, right? Millennia of evolution of these prefrontal cortex. They want to do something while we're meditating. So for a lot of people, especially beginners, or if you're refreshing, or I still do this if I'm having a distracted day, to use some kind of mental note to keep your mind engaged actually can be very settling. So the basic practice is noticing an in-breath as an in-breath, an out-breath as an out-breath, where you can say rising, falling, or your belly rising and going in as you breathe. So we can do that for a little while. Let's maybe just go inside. And I'm going to do a little bit more of a detailed posture thing this time. And talk you through why it matters. So I talk people through this a lot in guided meditations and drop-in groups, but I don't usually talk about why. This is the why. If you soften your eyes, and if they're already closed, you can soften them anyway, and turn them down at about a 45-degree angle. And then close them and imagine that you're taking in a vista, like a range of mountains or the horizon of the ocean on a beautiful day. And notice the feeling in your eyes. That feeling is a signal to your entire nervous system to relax. We evolved to associate a soft gaze with the parasympathetic nervous system, relaxation. So again, that internal horizon, whatever it is, mountains, rivers, oceans. And as you're softening the eyes, soften your tongue. Perhaps allowing the tip of your tongue to touch your palate, the roof of your mouth, right behind your upper teeth, very gently. Jaws can be slightly apart, lips closed. Maybe a slightly deeper, longer breath. All of this invokes a relaxation response. Noticing each in-breath as an in-breath. Each out-breath as an out-breath. Really inviting the breath to be relaxed, maybe allowing your stomach, your abdomen to soften, to be loose. and attending to the details of the waves of breathing in and out, resting your attention on those waves, gentle. Perhaps on the in-breath, saying rising or in. On the out-breath, falling or out-breath. Allowing your attention to stay with each sensation. If thoughts arise, when thoughts arise, imagining them fading to the sides, to the background, and placing awareness at the forefront, in front of you even. Standing in awareness. Each in-breath rising. Each out-breath falling. That's a very brief introduction or reintroduction to the practice of noting. And if there's time tonight, I will do a brief one in counting as well, or we'll do that next week. Meanwhile, let us see if there are other questions, comments. Something that popped for you with that. Susan, yeah.
I'll just say it's a very helpful reminder that noting is really a great thing when my mind is running around a lot. When I have a lot of anxiety or negative self-talk, it's something to latch on to for my mind. Yeah. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Manny, please.
Yeah, well, a long time I had a problem, you know, letting go of mind stuff and everything. But I found that helped me the most were two techniques. One was the box breathing, where you count to four and then hold it to four and let it out.
Yeah.
And that helped for a while. What really helps me is the visualization of whatever thought comes in, I put it in a bubble and just watch it go away.
Great.
And no matter how, and it takes a while to get the practice down because I always find myself wanting to go back to punishing myself for guilt stuff that I've and that's really what really helps me unless I want to wallow.
Yeah,
I just gave up. But yeah, the visualization really helps.
Yeah,
for me.
Yeah, great. So all of these are really helpful. Thoughts will be the topic in week four. We'll do a deeper dive into that. But to say yes, that visualizing can be very powerful. Sometimes I think when I first started, someone gave me the trick of putting my inner critic in a purse and closing it and then tucking the purse somewhere else in the house. So there's all different kinds of ways you can play with it. And both the bubbles and that image kind of also get at something else, which I don't think it's too early to talk about. It's okay to be playful. It is okay to use your imagination and to be a little even bit silly in this practice. It's not all about visualization. Classic mindfulness is learning to have a meta level observation, right? Observing the fact that we're aware. And it's not cheating to have a little fun getting there. So I told this story, I think, couple of days ago, but I think it was to a different group than ISC. One meditation retreat, I was having all this inner criticism and resentment, just like grudges were coming up like crazy and not part of my dominant personality. But if you sit by yourself long enough, every part of your personality comes out sooner or later. And it just had me. And eventually what broke it was visualizing these negative thoughts as this ugly little troll stomping around my head. And then I would invite the troll to go stomp away. So there's all kinds of things you can do. What I want to talk about next, though, is establishing or re-establishing a daily practice. So I just saw one eye roll. So I know at least, but maybe one or two of you struggle with this. I don't know. Maybe you're all just perfect with it. If you're new, you haven't had a chance to really try it yet. So I'm just going to offer some helpful tips, reminders, techniques. One is to pick or create a designated spot in your space. Okay. It can be a chair, it can be a corner, it can be a room or whatever. It's okay to be creative. Make it nice if you can. Set it up in a comfortable way, away from distractions. I had one friend I met, he's a long-term meditator now, but when we met, neither of us were long-term meditators yet. He had this intense tech job. He would get to work an hour early and he'd go sit in the server room because he knew no one would bug him in there. You know, the room where they keep all the computers air conditioned. So it's not cheating to find like a space tucked away at your work or your school or wherever. I've even known people in really intense jobs who will escape to the bathroom for 10 minutes to meditate because no one is going to ask you what you're doing in there, right? So find a consistent way to do it. For most people, first thing in the morning and or last thing at night is the easiest. I can't emphasize enough how important it is, if you can, to do it before you start checking email, social media, news, that kind of stuff. The quality of the meditation is very different if we do it before we start getting engaged with the troubles of the world or the demands on ourselves, right? If you're starting out or if you're restarting, just committing to a flyby, 5 minutes, 1 minute. One of my teachers used to say, make sure your butt touches the cushion once a day. Usually once you're there, you'll stay longer than the 1 to 2, 5 minutes because it feels good. And create a contingency plan. So if it's absolutely impossible to meditate, can you go for a little awe walk in the woods or be outside and be present? Right? Something to start establishing the mind, the habit of coming to the mind, to the body, to the senses. It's always okay to begin again. And it's always okay to do it right before going to bed if that was the only time that ended up working that day. In which case, it's also okay to lie in bed and do it for 10 minutes. And if you fall asleep in advance, who cares, right? You get 10 minutes of extra sleep. So I guess the point I'm making here is don't let perfection be the enemy of the good, right? Just do what you can. And being intentional is really, really helpful. I keep looking up at that camera because I'm used to it being on and realize I'm just staring above people's heads. It's really helpful to start with just a moment or two. You know how we talked about our intentions or our motivations for being here? That was on purpose. It's a really good way to start an individual session of meditation as well. It doesn't have to be elaborate. It can be as simple as, I need to come home to myself and relax. Or help me get out of this negative thought loop. Or I'm meditating because I want to be a better person. Whatever it is, just to tune into that for a minute and take nourishment from the intention. Intentions are powerful. Even when, as they often do, they take a long time to realize. It's supportive to be very intentional about setting up your body posture. Whatever posture you figure out works for you, and it can be different on different days. So I used to be a half lotus girl on the cushion all the time. That's not available to my body anymore. But even it's very different being intentional about sitting in a chair versus, you know, it starts to encode something in our bodies. It starts to send a signal. Okay, it's time to meditate because I'm sitting in this posture, whatever this posture is, if it's standing or lying with your arm up or whatever. It can also be really helpful to do some kind of intentional process at the beginning. I think of it as almost like a micro ritual, like 1 or 2 or 3 deeper breaths, or some people like to use mudras. or even just, you know, how I talked us through softening the eyes and softening the tongue, even that, all of these are signals, embodied signals that entrain the body into and the mind into, oh, it's time to meditate. And then at the end of a session, and with a bit of conscious reflection, just considering what unfolded in a generous way, be generous with yourself if you can. Consider what unfolded and a really kind, encouraging attitude is super helpful. If that doesn't come naturally, maybe have a quote or a passage from some author or teacher you consider kind and encouraging to read through and reflect on. This isn't just being nice to yourself. It's actually helpful to the learning. And that gentleness, the kindness, compassion is onward leading in this practice. I'll say too, for me, I started meditating because of physical pain. And so I didn't have initially, ironically, sitting up here now, any notion that I would be Buddhist or spiritual or anything else about it. I wanted to hurt less. That was my motivator. And the real gift for me was that I had absolutely no expectations about what meditation was supposed to be or do for like the first year. And that was such a gift. So I want to offer to you, whether you're a beginner or an experienced beginner, it's okay not to have a huge amount of expectations right away. And then just check in. Notice, is there a difference in your life on the days you have time to meditate versus the days you don't? Just notice cause and effect. Many people start to notice differences in their days. So we have about 5 minutes left. Any questions or comments about establishing or re-establishing the home practice? Yes, Susan.
I like to take advantage of how many places I can sit with people with this whole online thing. So I find when I punctuate my alone time with sitting with people, it really helps.
Yes.
For whatever reason, it helps a lot. Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you. I meant to mention that and forgot to. So it's not in this day and age, there's a Zoom group happening every day of the week, usually four or five of them, if you can find them. Not to mention centers like this one, if you happen to be close enough to come, we have things going on almost every day of the week here. So it can be really helpful to meditate with others. Really, really helpful and supportive. Anyone else? Questions? Thoughts?
There's one in the chat.
Oh, thank you. Susan, I like to meditate in the evenings. Is there a difference in meditating in the morning or evening? Yes, there's a difference. It depends on your energy level, right? Some people are early birds, some people are night owls. So ideally, I do both, honestly. And ideals don't always happen. I would encourage you, whichever you pick, just try the other one and notice what the difference is for you. So some people find they're fresher and more energetic in the mornings. Other people, or sometimes the same people, find the evenings are phenomenally helpful to sort of do some mental hygiene before going to bed. You sleep a lot better. And it's a chance to let everything decant from the day and process through. Or maybe being already a little bit tired helps you relax. So it's different for each person. The most important thing is to find a rhythm that works for you. Okay. So this practice, meditation practice, as I mentioned before, it's more like a workout regimen than a quick fix. It takes time. And it works phenomenally well. It doesn't work at all if you don't do it. Okay? So that is a plug for giving it a try. And I will talk about, I'll actually see if anyone wants to talk about Donna, but I'll just say very briefly, in closing, your homework, should you choose to accept it, and it is optional, there are no grades in this class, is give a shot at meditating 20 minutes a day. If that seems like a wild stretch for you because you're a total beginner or your life is absolutely nuts, try for 10 minutes. But really try to carve it out each day. And second piece of homework is to pick one routine activity to be mindfully aware during. Brushing your teeth, washing the dishes, walking. Something you do every day, then something that's obvious enough. Like, you pick something too general, it's hard. And then be gentle with yourself when you forget to do it for a day or two, because that happens to a lot of people. Just see what that's like. And I'll be interested to hear about how those work and what you notice about your posture in the coming week, since we talked about posture a lot today. So that is the formal class. Thank you for coming. And as I mentioned before, this center is based on generosity. So you can offer financial gifts online, gift to Insight Santa Cruz or to the teacher on the website. There are links for both, or there are baskets in the back here. And if that kind of generosity isn't available to you right now, know that your practice is a form of generosity too. And there are also volunteer opportunities, and if anyone's interested in them, come up and talk to me and I'll show you. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for spending time doing this. It's a beautiful thing to do for yourselves and for the world.
You're welcome.
Have a lovely evening.
Thank you.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.